ways. I'm just your average Jane. The super doesn't stand for model, but that doesn't mean I'm plain. If all you see is how I look, you miss the super chick within. And that christen you Titanic, underestimated and swim. I've got the right flow, gonna be myself. 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 And I'll be everything.
We now know who will be the next mayor of the city of Chicago. And so much has been made of this historic moment, and it is exciting. It is another, experience of the peaceful transition of power in our democracy. And I have to say, I'm a dork, Scott Stantis. Let's be honest. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and I served as a judge of election today, and I watched my neighbors come in, cast their votes. And my neighborhood is the far northwest side of Chicago, a neighborhood that voted heavily against Mayor Washington, that, kind of decided, okay, fine, we'll vote for Obama, and then came out full-throated for Lori Lightfoot in this election, and it was impressive. And I don't know what to say about that.
Well, first off, I think you're nuts, because you're going on, what, an hour and a half of sleep?
Let's say yes.
Okay. Yeah. And the lizard people aren't real.
I here's the thing, is I met a lot of people today, people, some who were excited about voting, some who showed up and really said, this is my civic duty. And that led me to think about, this big conversation we've been having, this historical moment, this fight against the machine. Because Sarah and I were talking about this before the show. What does it mean for us? What does it mean for the citizens of Chicago now? What happens next? Because Sarah, you were mentioning this as well.
Yeah, I feel like...
Hold on, why am I not hearing you as well? As I, there we go, that microphone.
There we go, yeah. Sorry. So many microphones in here by me. but I think it really is an important thing to wonder, what happens now for just people in Chicago? What taxes will we be faced with? Will there be any additional taxes? How can they affect us? I think these are very big questions that are just looming in the air.
They didn't seem to be answered.
Right, that were never answered during the campaign. And, I feel like Lightfoot would often reiterate certain points, and then you would ask a follow-up question to try to lead into something else, and it wouldn't really go anywhere from there. So I'm just anxious to see what may happen next.
What do you think, Scott?
Well, the specifics, they were very, very, very light on the specifics of how they're going to deal with the financial crap burger that Rahm Emanuel leaves for the next mayor. She is going to face a $1 billion pension deficit, the payment that they're going to have to pay. They don't have that kind of money. You can go down the list. Our bond rating is what? A click above junk. CPS is below junk. And things like that. These are tall, massive problems. And how are they going to be faced? And she's going to face an antagonistic over, 50% of the city council is coming back. So that means the machine is not going away, folks. It's still here. And it's going to fight her tooth and tongue. And we're going to see if she seems to me, from watching her during this campaign, has shown a band of iron in her spine that is admirable.
And I think that's a lot of the momentum that she had was, even though this is daunting, she struck a lot of people as someone who could take that on. And despite the fact that maybe she didn't have answers for the specifics, neither did Chuy Garcia when he ran, by the way. Remember, he said, I want to wait and see the books first. She didn't have to say any of that. There was so much else around her and Preckwinkle for this, but people believe that Tony Preckwinkle would raise taxes based on their experiences historically with some of the policies that she had.
You had a great line.
Someone posted on Facebook that that Tony Preckwinkle left, she lost in every single ward that drinks soda.
I can see all of them. Yeah, she lost. She lost every ward. She lost the fourth ward where she was the alderman for 20 years.
For people that don't follow politics clearly, or consistently, that's all she's going to be known for. And people vote against people for that reason, as we know in Chicago history, with the blizzard, things like that. It's just, that's going to be her
great
legacy.
Point. Wow, look at you with a Blandic
yeah,
reference.
I'm not some idiot up here that just left the stage. I had a degree in political science in the 90s from a very, very good community college. No, I don't know.
Well, that was before you could say something went viral. That was, people just remembered they couldn't move their cars, and they chose Mayor Jane Byrne,
who yeah.
represented change. And I think that that's a lot of what the energy was behind Lori Lightfoot.
I think the critical mass is struck, though, too. I think, you know, Burke was emblematic, although it's fascinating that everybody right. was hurt by Burke except Burke. It's amazing.
Guy, yeah. He's untouchable.
But also Preckwinkle's connection with Berrios, with Rahm, with, mm-hmm. I mean, which they allegedly they didn't get along too well. But still, I think they're perceived as all part of this massive moving juggernaut that just gobbles up the air.
Well, I want to know what people are thinking. We might be hearing from the new treasurer of Chicago, wow. Melissa Conyers Irvin, who is a state representative currently and is the elected city treasurer. I'm hoping to hear from her in the next segment. If not, we will continue our conversation as also
she's
planned.
Texting me right now.
Did she?
You know.
She's very excited. She has she's also won a race against Maya Pawar.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about these topics and more today. Again, we have elected the next mayor of the city of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot. Some people are calling her Lori Landslide Lightfoot. So now poor Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, has to call her L3. I'm sorry. She's not just L squared, she's L cubed.
Okay.
And well, Paul Farvar, comedian Esquire.
Mm-hmm.
That's your title. And we'll
I will be
apparently poli-sci grad as well.
I had a political science degree from the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana.
And I have a history degree, and look where we are now. You know, dreams can take you anywhere.
Yes. This is where we are. We're all the same
place.
All you
need is a degree and a dream.
Scott, what was your degree?
Art and journalism.
Yeah.
Oh, that seems appropriate.
Sorry to bother you.
Fine. More after this on 720 WGN 312-981-7200. It is a historic evening in Chicago, and we're so happy you're joining us for it. I don't know what song this is, Paul.
That's what I was going to ask you. You were really excited about this song.
I like music. Hey, by the way, I want to congratulate the entire crew that just did an amazing show from the Billy Goat, Justin Kaufman, Andrea Darlis, and all the producers that were involved, including our very own Roe Coleman. I know that they had Ashley Byhun was down at the Billy Goat, obviously Peter Zimmerman, and just a lot of great folks at Kim Gordon in the newsroom, Don Kleppen, who you've heard throughout the night as well. We've got Vic Vaughn coming up. Everyone getting as much audio and information as they can. I know people have a lot of questions. As far as demographics go, we're going to be talking about that over the next day or so. We don't have those numbers just yet, and we'll continue to update you on the aldermanic races throughout the city. I think that the O'Connor race in the 40th was interesting, and I know that Scott was talking before the break. Scott Stantis, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, joins us on the Patty Vasquez Show.
Hey.
Hello, and
hello.
A couple of great cartoons, because your first cartoon that you sent out earlier in the day was that no matter what happens in this election, history will be made.
Yeah, it's remarkable. You're going to have, you know, two African American women running for the mayor of Chicago. It's remarkable.
It is, and I was a lot of people were excited. I was excited in February when we found out that this was going to be the runoff, and I was a judge of election that day on 2 hours of sleep. I am now was a judge of election today on maybe an hour and 15, and I had even more fun. I don't know. There's something
I don't understand how excited you are. It's good. I like your enthusiasm, but I had to do that a few times in my life, and I was not happy about it at all. But
I had a lot of fun today, and I was
good.
Okay, so maybe we should talk a little bit about the voting process in Chicago and what that looks like. Obviously, a lot of early voting. I'm curious to find out if folks decided pretty early on, because it seems like we had polling numbers ahead of this. I mean,
yeah.
The numbers were huge coming into today, and I want to know if that affected anybody. Did that make you go, okay, I should get my vote in, or did you think, well, it looks like it's a done deal, I'm not going to bother? Do you think that had any effect today as well? Because the turnout, they're still going to, it looks like it's going to be a little low. It was low in my precinct.
They're talking about 33%, which is lower than the election 5 weeks ago.
Right. Which is disappointing, I think.
Well, there was more that you were voting for back then. I think there was a lot more stakes. People were there was only a few runoffs in this election, as opposed to mm-hmm. how many you were voting for judges. You're voting for a lot of things. So
my my voting. Yes, you're right. There were referendums on a lot of the ballots.
That people
all
cared
city.
About. Yeah.
Oh, there were so many people that couldn't. They went to their booth. Right. So in my precinct, everybody except for two people chose to have a paper ballot, and
we only had paper option in my place.
Actually, they should all have an electric electronic. They might not offer it. You know, you can ask for it because you have they have to have it available. But we could talk about that off the air.
Okay.
And then we can maybe have an investigation. But everyone like would go off to their booth and draw the, you know, connect the two lines and then come back like, is that it?
Yeah, it was so fast.
Oh, you didn't have an aldermanic race?
No, we only had the treasurer
and the mayor.
I had an aldermanic race. I had three things to vote on. That's it.
And people were like, yeah.
It took less than a minute.
Right.
Actually, I think the paper was quicker than the electronic by far, because then you don't have to program, you don't have to wait.
Correct.
You put it in the ballot, and you can see how many people voted before you too. I like that.
So I don't know if I can do this in a succinct manner without talking too quickly. I do enjoy participating in Election Day. When I was a little kid, my dad was a precinct captain, and I remember going, you know, porch to porch and getting people to sign petitions and everything. So today I got up. I went to bed at about 2:15, and I got up at 4:05, and I was like jacked. I was like, okay, it's time to go.
Insane.
So
good for you.
So I got dressed. And I drove off to the 7-Eleven.
I said, good for you. I said, it's insane.
I got a cooler. I got one of my coolers in the basement. And I went to the 7-Eleven. I filled it with an ice bag. I got a bunch of bottles of soda. I went to the Dunkin' Donuts. I got two boxes of donuts. And I got a big box of coffee. Yes. And here's why. My alderman lost in the election in February. And I was pretty sure that the new alderman was not going to step up. And I was right. I fed the gymnasium. There were three precincts in my at our elections, our polling place, and so 8 o'clock rolls around, no coffee or donuts from the precinct. There, 10 o'clock rolls around, 11 o'clock. Now people start panicking. They're not going to send us lunch. And I was like, I can't afford more. I've already like fed people for the morning
out of your pocket.
So we start calling around and trying to figure out where we're going to order pizza from. At noon, the current alderman shows up. And we're like, and we all were like, kind of, they were all sort of angry, and I thought they were going to swarm him. And he came in, and he had three boxes of donuts and three boxes of coffee.
Oh, nice.
No, 5 hours too late. Because
from
coffee,
where, though?
At noon.
Where was the donuts from?
Dunkin' Donuts. Okay. And I walked up to him, and I said, what's happening? And he goes, I don't have any volunteers left, because he lost his last election, right?
Oh.
So we had gotten pizza from Paterno's. Everyone was fine. I had brought soda, because nobody had anything to drink. And then and this is so weird. This is what Election Day comes down to for your judges. They just want to know when they're going to eat. So at 5 o'clock, the new alderman, I'm not kidding you, one of his volunteers shows up with one pizza box for 13 judges. And it's not just one pizza box, Scott. It is one of those, you know, that what's that? Is it Jersey style? It's like a rectangular shape and it's like doughy and everything. Oh, we laughed at this guy mercilessly to the point where he goes, I never want to come back here again. That was what my polling day was like. But in between that, I saw my neighborhood show up to vote. And you know, the numbers, I wish they were better, but the people who showed up, I mean, rich and poor. I saw a 94-year-old woman vote. I saw a guy show up with his baby in a stroller. And, you know, white people and black people and Latinos and Asians. And I was like, I love my neighborhood. And everyone showed up to express their civic voice.
Where yes. You're like, we should do this more, guys. And like, you're like, maybe we can do this like next week. Why don't you guys want to have a picnic? Like, you could just have events so you don't have to wake up at 4 a.m.
You mean like, yeah, but I go to those too. I go to like, you know, I do stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. I love this. I I wish that more people showed up. I can't make people want to be more invested in democracy and what's important in your city. But and here's the thing: if people are upset about the results today, guess what? Show up next time.
Yeah,
you know, and bring pizza and donuts.
Yeah, and you're talking about 32 or 33% of registered voters. By the way, that's not eligible voters. That means like 12% of the eligible voters mm-hmm. voted in this election. That's
low.
Bothers me. Yeah. But it's great that you had donuts.
But here's the thing. Look, it's all part of that. It's all look. And that's what I was saying earlier. What does it mean that Lori Lightfoot is now the mayor of Chicago, right? Because at a fundamental level, what were we worried about today? What are we going to eat? Right? Where's it? What's the next meal going to be?
That's the irony.
But
da, da, da.
No, I'm saying, that, you know, we operate on a basic level. Right, we operate on like what's gonna happen next.
Is she gonna make the city better? I think that a healthy dose of new blood, transparency. Yeah, I think it's gonna be better. I do.
Okay.
I think a lot of people. I can't speak for why it's so low, but I think a lot of people didn't have a strong opinion one way or the other. They would have been either, it was like lesser two evils to them, or mm-hmm. they were happy with either decision. And the people that I spoke to. And the only people that had strong opinions, again, were people that remember Tony Preckwinkle for the soda tax thing.
Right.
And so that's, unless you had a runoff, there was no real reason to go out there.
Let me ask you something. I've been floating this idea tonight. I floated with our editorial board at the Tribune. Should we have mandatory voting in this country?
No. I want people to want it, I guess. And that goes to what Chicago's future is. You know, you got to want to make your city better. And what does that mean? But okay. I can't make them. And that's why I don't think that
mandatory. Well, you can. That's what I was suggesting.
I don't want to incentivize it.
Like, if they know that there's going to be donuts for voters.
Exactly. I know.
I would go a lot. But we can't like do three that. Or four times.
Right. There was a lot of that today. We were like, can we offer them donuts? No, you can't offer
I know. You can't. Them. You can't. But the numbers have gone up since they started early voting. I think the bigger problem is that it's hard for people to vote during the week. And that's something that people have talked about, changing the date of the vote to a weekend. But if you're doing early voting and that number didn't increase significantly as much as people said it was, then that's another problem. But other states, I don't know. A lot of states don't have early voting. Is that right?
I'm not familiar. I don't know. I've never voted anywhere else because this is the only place. Chicago is the only place I've legally voted.
Pretty sure in Wyoming, you can only vote for 2 hours. I'm just going
to
say
as long
that.
As you drive, you know, 75 miles an hour to get there. Scott, before we go, I know that you have a lot of work to do and you've done a lot of great work. Wonderful artwork on
Next Mayor. I can draw. I got her. She has Rom eyes.
Oh, boy.
She does. That's awesome.
That's not a compliment.
Oh, no, they're smoky.
Okay.
You could get lost in them.
Before we go, some final words on what you think is next for the city of Chicago or what you're feeling tonight.
I think that we have a wonderful new beginning, and I think that Lori Lightfoot is a fresh air and some bright light, and I hope against hope that she has 75% of the vote coming into office. She's got that power coming in and that she can use it. And she's going to have some very difficult fights going ahead. And I know that the city's behind her, obviously, every ward.
Every ward that drinks soda.
She has a mandate. Yeah.
And a lot of support behind her. So thank you so much, Scott, for joining us. Everyone, you can follow Scott's great work at Scott Stantis on Twitter and chicagotribune.com/Stantis. And, of course, every week on the Prickly City podcast.
Yes.
As well as the Mincing Rascals.
The Mincing Rascals, where I predicted this would be a much closer race than we all thought.
Oh, I thought it was going to be I thought that Lori Lightfoot would win 75%, but I wasn't on the last. Not by 75%. She would have 75% of the vote.
Really?
I don't do well at math. It is a new night. So I don't know if that's a way to put it, Paul Farvar. A lot of people are celebrating. A lot of people are just wondering, when can we stop talking about politics?
I think you could stop tonight.
Right now. We're going to take a break tonight. You and I have had a lot of fun performing together recently.
Yeah.
We did shows in Indianapolis. We've got a couple of fundraisers coming up. And one of my favorite organizations and my first time performing for them and with them is Willow House. Joining us in the studio, we have Aaron Layden, who is the executive director for Willow House, and Charlotte Schuber, who is the clinical site coordinator for Willow House, which is a nonprofit social service organization. And their sole mission is to support children, families, schools and communities who are coping with grief and the death of a loved one, which is not easy for people to talk about. And we want people to come out, support Willow House, and also to find a way to have these conversations. Not necessarily in the show that we're doing. We're going to, you know, give you something to think about, but in so many different ways. And that's kind of what it means to keep talking. I'm so glad to meet you tonight, Charlotte. Aaron and I have known each other for almost 10 years.
Easily.
And always my pleasure to do these events with you.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit, Aaron, first of all, how you transitioned from some of the work that you've done in the past with other groups and joined Willow House to become their executive director.
Sure. Well, thanks for having us once again. Glad Charlotte's here and finally got to meet Paul.
Yes.
So that's exciting. But, so I've been a nonprofit for 10 years. As you know, we met way back when. I think our little guys were in school at one point, but that's when my son Emmett started to have seizures. And so we started our own organization to raise awareness and to get people talking about epilepsy. So back then, you know, people were afraid to say epilepsy. And so we started the American Epilepsy Outreach Foundation. We did that for a few years. And Emmett was having 200 seizures a day. We did kind of was thrown into it, like most things, and felt when I came across Willow House that I could relate to it as far as the isolation. So during that time, it was very difficult to talk about it. It was difficult for my friends to come and talk about it and really kind of find out ways to help us get through it. So you kind of got to know who your real friends were at that time. And so coming to Willow House, I felt it was an easy transition because of the fear of the unknowns, the isolation, and to be able to talk to other people that really get it. And so at Willow House, that's what we do. We connect people that understand and truly know what you're going through and to help you get through that, especially for children. Our focus is on the children and teens, and then the parents get an opportunity to meet with other parents that are going through that. So we're there to really kind of support them and get them through their grief and share their experiences and really remember their loved one.
And there's often this idea that no one's going to understand my pain, no one's going to understand me, and yet so much of what we go through can be familiar if we both, you know, Charlotte, honor what other people are feeling, but also kind of take a step back and honor what we're feeling. You know,
absolutely.
You and I were talking in the green room about normalizing this conversation.
Right.
And there's a long way to go, and some people will never want to get there. What drew you to this kind of work?
So for me, I was drawn to the work because I had a formative loss in my life when I was 15. And so kind of ever since then, whether consciously or not, grief has been a part of my life. And I think while I was studying social work, I kind of looked grief in the mirror a little bit more directly and said, okay, because I've had this formative loss experience, maybe I can use that to connect with others who have had loss as well, other people who are navigating life after the death of someone that they love.
And one of the things that I don't know if I've ever told Paul the story, but you know, when my father passed away, it's easy to remember the really painful things that people say because you're already in a place of pain, and so people don't realize they're saying something hurtful, right? They don't realize, and they don't intend to. They want to soothe, but they're also trying to be comfortable themselves, aren't they, Charlotte?
Oh, absolutely. And they might regurgitate things that they've heard before, some of the platitudes that we've heard over time that they don't really think about saying, you know, the things that you hear kind of repeatedly, oh, he's in a better place, things of that nature.
Right. They say he's not in pain anymore. And right. And intuitively, I knew that with my dad. I mean, he was deteriorating quickly. He was, you know, suffering from small cell lung cancer, which had traveled through his bloodstream to his brain and was starting to affect him significantly. That doesn't mean that I didn't want to keep trying, you know, that he, the night before my father passed away, he was sitting on the front porch when I came home from Zany's, Paul. I came home from a show and my dad was sitting on the front porch and he goes, I'm feeling pretty good, kid. He goes, you know, and he was in this, you know, incredibly intense round of radiation. And he goes, I think I'm going to be around for another 5 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I said, Daddy, that's all I ever wanted was more time. And he was ready to fight, right? So when people say, well, he's not in pain anymore, it's hard when you're in the middle of that or wherever you are, you know, and so much of the language that we use. And I love that you guys are doing a comedy event because people would probably think, well, this seems counterintuitive. You're talking right. about an organization that helps people through grief. But I love that because there is still humor, right? You have to still find yourself in all of that. Have you had conversations like that as well with people? Have they said, well, you know, what's there to laugh about?
Yeah, a little bit. And yeah. I think that's, like you said, it's counterintuitive. But at the same time, you know, the benefit of laughter, what we felt was fitting because, you know, you even hear the saying, you know, laughter is the best medicine. But we remind our families that it is okay to laugh again. You know, it's when I was in the thick of with Emmett, you know, it's definitely different, but it took a while to laugh again. But you remember that time when you laugh out loud after just being so in a dark place. Mm-hmm. And that first time you laugh, you remember that.
Yeah, I told you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, I think this is a great way to remember people, you know, and think about, you know, what were the funny times that we had together?
Yeah. How did you laugh together?
Yeah, exactly. And so we have a nice surprise that night even. We have some of the kids kind of sharing some funny stories of their loved one. And that's kind of the beauty of Willow House, again, is that we help them remember and connect with their loved one. And so they'll have some funny stories to share.
And we have a lot in store for you. It's going to be comedian Paul Farvar, and I call him Esquire, because as much as he's trying to leave the law, they won't let him. Mm-hmm. They keep pulling you back,
pulling
Paul.
You back, yeah.
Yes, but we're going to do comedy on Saturday.
Yeah, it's you know, I watched the documentary with Gilbert Gottfried. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's a great, it talks about his life and you know, how he always pushes the envelope too far sometimes. And the highlight of the show is when he has to perform at an event for St. Jude's, and after he has to follow somebody who just talked about this very compelling and moving story about losing a loved one, and he does, I don't want to ruin the movie, but he does a great job of tying it all together, and you can see people just needing that laugh, needing that part of their to be reunited with that part of their body again. Laughter.
And you mentioned that you'll always remember, you know, laughing again. And I remember the first big laugh I had. And I'm sure I laughed in between my father's death in June of 2001 and when I remember really laughing in August. I was getting my chakras aligned, or my Reiki or whatever it was. And I told my, you know, masseuse what I was going through. And she like had her hands over me and she stopped. And I told her my dad was a cab driver. And she goes, "Oh, your father is always with you. He's your spiritual guide." And I sat on this table. I just remembered laughing so loud because all I could think was, great, now I have a dead cab driver giving me directions. and it was a comic in me, and I was able to connect with that. And that's part of what we're talking about. But I also, but there was also a kindness to what she said, because it wasn't the sort of, it wasn't the routine. It wasn't the, you know, and that's easy for us, and that's okay too. We have to forgive those around us at some point for saying those things, and to forgive ourselves for even getting mad too.
Right, absolutely. And just understanding where everyone is, and that it's more just what we've been taught as a culture, and it's not that anyone is trying to be insensitive.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering, 312-981-7200, and maybe this is stirring up emotions that are hard, but that's okay too. You know, and that's, no one's pushing you in any direction, and we're not laughing at you know, at anyone's expense. We're sharing some stories. 312-981-7200. Is there something someone said to you that really has stayed with you when you lost somebody, when you were grieving? What was the kindest thing someone said to you, the most helpful thing that you remember someone saying that kind of cut through all that noise? And maybe it was years later. Because some people will say, you're still hurt or you're still sad. That's weird too, because one of the things I've told people, and this is different for everybody, it's not that it gets easier, it gets different. Mm-hmm. You know, being a daddy's girl never ends. I'm always going to, you know, every time baseball season starts, and he was not a Cubs fan, Paul, mm-hmm. so you can't hold that against
me. Say anything.
He hated the Cubs from the age of 10, and we'll talk about that some other time. But every time baseball, because we would play ball. So 312-981-7200. What is one of the things that you remember fondly? Fondly is a hard way to put it, but what stands out for you, the most helpful thing someone said when you were grieving? 312-981-7200. And again, this event is on Saturday night. That's April 6th. It's going to be at the Gorton Community Center at 400 East Illinois Road in Lake Forest. You can go to willowhouse.org for more information. And I shouldn't be remiss to mention that Annabella Ball is joining us. You have to say it that way. Annabella Ball from WGN-TV, Morning News. Paul Farvar and me. And so, well, we want everyone to hang out with us. And it really, I encourage you to support Willow House. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and joining me is comedian Paul Farvar. He'll be joining me on stage as well on Saturday night at the Gorton Community Center.
Lake Forest.
in Lake Forest with Annabelle Laval joining us from WGN-TV News. And we are joined by Willow House's Executive Director, Aaron Layden, and the Clinical Site Coordinator for Willow House, Charlotte Schuber. And I was asking before the break, what's the kindest thing or the most helpful thing someone has said to you when you are going through grief? And we got a lovely message from the 773. They said, I lost my mom in May, and a friend sent me this because I just lost my dad in January, and I try to remember this. Grief never ends, but it changes. It's a passage, not a place to stay. Grief is not a sign of weakness nor a lack of faith. It is the price of love. And that's why I think that that's right. If you, it does mean that. It means that you loved so greatly that your heart breaks because of that loss of losing someone who loved you that much as well.
Right. Yeah. Right. And I was thinking today about, you know, how tears are kind of the more obvious outpouring of grief and expression of grief. But laughter is kind of a remembrance of love of that person. If you're thinking of a funny story or a memory about them, it's just another emotional expression.
Yeah, I agree. And that's like at my father's funeral, I said I spoke. And you know what's weird is that I've now heard from two people who've told me that they spoke at my father's funeral. And I really have no memory of it. And neither does my husband. It would be one thing if it were me, but I just have no memory of it. I'm like, no, you didn't. And I'm like, OK, maybe that's their truth. And I have no idea. But one of the things that I always remember was, and this is something I carry with me in life. My dad used to hit the ball. Like, he would hit me fly balls. I was an outfielder. And he would hit the ball. And I go, Daddy, I'm tired of chasing the ball. And my dad goes, well, then catch one. And that's the thing, is if I wouldn't have to run so much if I was just a little bit better.
But those personal stories are what makes, so it's just like Charlotte said, it just reminds you of who that person is, or you learn more about that person, even if you were close to someone. And that's why I love watching, sadly, we've lost a lot of comedians recently, but those remembrances that they have for them are always amazing, because comedians will talk openly about stories that they probably shouldn't tell, but they're amazing stories, and you connect with those people. You're crying and laughing at the same time. And those, I mean the one that I saw for Brody Stevens that they did at the Comedy Store was amazing. And then we lost someone here in Chicago, a comedian, and we were all at Full House at Laugh Factory. We're just all hearing these amazing stories about his closer friends, and you're just laughing and crying at the same time. It was the most bizarre experience I've ever had in my life.
And that's why I encourage so many people to help us bring the joy to so many of the folks that benefit from the services from Willow House. Paul Farvar, Annabelle Laval, and I will all be performing this Saturday, April 6th at the Gorton Community Center at 400 East Illinois Road in Lake Forest. And you can purchase tickets at willowhouse.org. And it's going to be a blast. Yeah. What time does it start? At 7:30.
So we'll have...
I'm only asking because I need to know what time to be
right
there.
I'll let you know. I should have that run a show for you tomorrow.
Yeah.
No.
That's all good.
No.
You've been really good at
shorts are allowed, right? I can wear my shorts.
No.
I wear all my shows.
Yeah, it's come as you are.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
So it starts at 7:30. We have heavy appetizers, delicious appetizers by Savor the Date. Craig Rutherford is our caterer. We have a lot of alcohol donated, but
thank you.
Drive and drink responsibly.
Lift.
Yeah, there you go. A lift, definitely. But then we have a great amount of raffle items, so we'll do a silent auction that many people have donated. Really great items. Unfortunately, I can't think of one, sadly, even though they're all spread out throughout our office right now. You can't move. But and then the show starts at around 9 to 11, so we'll be there for the most of the night. We have popcorn and everything as you go into the theater. It's going to be really great. Like I said, we have this great video that the kids made. Obviously, our great stand-up comedians for the night. I think Anna's going to be a blast to help open it up.
She is. Yeah.
And, it's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, you talk about... you know, your dad will be your spiritual guide. I mean, and you laughed out loud because you imagined him, you know.
Following me everywhere.
And he would have laughed at that, too. So it's, yeah. It's
He'd be like, Pat, I got to take a break sometime.
Yeah.
I got to grab a smoke, all right?
Right.
Yeah, I got to go watch the ponies out at Arlington.
So, yeah, it's just remembering and laughing and, you know, thinking back to the time when you had together. And I think they, too, would want you to be happy and laughing again. So that we're hoping that we kind of break that cycle on Saturday.
I love it. And I want to thank you both for joining us. And I encourage, again, our audience to come out and support Willow House on Saturday night by going to willowhouse.org. And if you're looking for guidance, if you're looking for comfort, if you're looking to help somebody that you know get through grief, also, of course, visit willowhouse.org. Charlotte, it was a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, you too. And thank you for having us.
Of course, I look forward to having you back, please.
Yes.
Right.
Is there anything I'm missing? I don't want to leave anything on the table.
Yeah, we do have a promo code.
Code.
Oh, promo code.
For $25 off, I think. So it's Patty.
P-A-T-T-I. P-A-T-T-I. Promo code P-A-T-T-I for how much off?
$25 off.
$25 off your tickets. So there you go.
That's a good deal.
You discount, you still support them.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. It's open bar, all you can eat, and all you can laugh.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much. Our conversation continues in a moment. Again, go to willowhouse.org for more information about our entire conversation.
Hey, Patty.
Hey, John O'Malley on the line with us. So who are you in the room with right now?
I'm with the mayor-elect, Lori Lightfoot.
All right.
Turn it over to her. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think that's going to be okay, Vic. Do you mind?
No, please.
Mayor-elect, Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah, hold on one second. Yep. There she is.
Hey, Patty.
Hi, Lori. I recall having an interview with you. I'm very good. I'm wondering how you're doing tonight.
You know what? I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time hearing you.
I don't know why. I'm guessing there's a lot of celebration going on where you are. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm trying to move away from the crowd. How are you?
we're pretty good. I think we're part of the crowd that wishes you a congratulations on a historic evening. How are you feeling?
You know what? I feel really, really overwhelmed with joy and humbled by the incredible response that we received from voters all over the city.
You know, a lot of conversations are obviously revolving around how historic this is, but we're wondering what you want to tell the city of Chicago and what this means for them as citizens of a city that has struggled in so many ways and is looking for hope.
Well, I just want to say thank you. People have placed their hope and confidence in me, and I'm going to work hard every day to earn it.
What were you hearing? Because I know you never took your foot off the gas. No matter what
No.
the poll numbers were, you kept showing up.
No.
And in districts that not necessarily, you know, were going to go your way. I was the judge of elections in Jefferson Park, a neighborhood that doesn't necessarily,
Oh, okay.
yeah, doesn't necessarily lean toward, you know, progressive politics. What were you hearing from different neighborhoods in the city?
You know, what I heard from people resoundingly is that they really want to change. They were really sick of the same old, and we're looking for something new and inspirational and something that they could have confidence in. So, you know, we talked a lot about really changing the compact between, you know, residents in the city and its government. And I think that message really resonated with people.
This has been such a long year for you. Andrea Darlis and I had you in studio last summer, months before Mayor Rahm Emanuel said that he was not going to seek re-election. What drew you into the race in the first place? Because other people, you know, saw an opportunity when they saw he was leaving, and you didn't wait for that.
No, I didn't wait because I thought our city was headed in the wrong direction. And I just saw people all across the city who were growing up in families like mine, low-wage, working-class families that were just struggling. And it was very clear to me that there was no plan to help them. And I have been very, very lucky in my life, and I wanted to make sure that I was an advocate and a voice for people whose voices really needed to be heard.
What are your plans for the next few days? I mean, what is a relaxing after a grueling campaign like this look for? What does that mean for you in the next few days?
Well, for me, certainly we're not going to be at the same pace that we were, but there's a lot of work to be done between now and May 20th when swearing in happens in the inauguration. So I want to hit the ground running and start working on making sure that we are ready to govern from day one.
Again, we are talking to Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot. Did Tony Preckwinkle reach out to you tonight?
She did. She did.
What was your conversation like?
Well, it was a very brief conversation. She said she was calling to congratulate me, and I thanked her for that and told her that I look forward to working with her.
And I don't want to keep you too long because I know that you are in the middle of celebrating with so many people who have helped you get to where you are today. What do you want to say to all the supporters who really worked tirelessly in this campaign?
I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart.
And
people have sacrificed so much, and I'm deeply, deeply appreciative.
And I have to ask, are there folks that are still kind of going, we did it? I mean, there has to be a sense of astonishment as well in your campaign,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, and me included, we're pinching ourselves at the incredible mandate that we've received, and we're very, very committed to making sure that we are true to that mandate.
I know that that's going to take a lot of work, and you have to build alliances. You're coming into a city hall, you know, one with people under investigation. There's a lot of rumors about these tapes.
Yeah.
What do you want to do in order to sort of, you know, work together and build a, you know, an alliance or an allegiance with the people that you're going to be working with in all these communities?
Well, I think it's really important for us to set a standard of integrity. I want people to have faith and confidence in my administration, that we are going to do the right thing, that we're going to put them first. That was something that I ran on, that I believe in, and we're going to make government much more transparent and accountable to ordinary people.
And you, by the way, I don't think a lot of people are talking about the new treasurer-elect, Melissa Conyers-Irvin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on the idea she has? And you just mentioned transparency. That's her plan as well. And, you know, she has a lot of experience with trying to work on our state pensions. What is your relationship going to be like with Springfield?
Well, I think having a very good, productive relationship with Springfield is critically important. I'm happy that we have a governor and members of the General Assembly who understand and recognize the importance of Chicago. But we'll have a very robust Chicago agenda for Springfield, and similarly with Washington, D.C.
Yeah, that's what I think a lot of people are looking for, because we have all this negative language that goes back and forth between us and Washington. I know that, Paul, you can ask a question. We have Paul Farvar in the studio as well. Do you mind if he asks you a question while we have
sure.
you?
No, I didn't have a question. I was just going to congratulate you on a great win. That's all. I wanted to say I talked to you.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, a lot of folks geeking out about how incredible this moment is. We were in studio and not expecting this. We want to thank John O'Malley, who is our legal expert and a contributor on the show. And if you are up late sometimes, and of course we would love to pre-record interviews with you, I would invite you back anytime. Your schedule is going to get a little tighter now. I think you're aware of that.
A little bit.
Just a little bit.
You guys have been great to me, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Well, I appreciate the fact that you joined us so late at night and well into the hours of your celebration. Carry on. Enjoy yourself. Congratulations.
Yes.
This is so monumental, I know, for the people in your life. So I want you to be able to spend some time with them. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Again, Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot making history in Chicago. And she knows that. And it's going to keep sinking in. It's going to get real. I swear it will.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Thank you so much. Bye. What just happened? All right. I just talked to the mayor-elect. You know who wouldn't talk to me? The last mayor. In case you missed it, we just had a conversation with Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot, and the podcast will be available shortly if you want to listen to it again. And by the way, for those of you who might miss any part of the show, if you have a smart speaker, all you have to say is, play the Patty Vasquez. That's a different show altogether. That's a show they won't let me
do
anymore.
That's your new show you're doing on Netflix.
Yes. What? Play the Patty Vasquez podcast, and you'll get the latest episode. So that will be up shortly. Thank you so much, Cassara. Yeah, we were having a moment where we didn't know, do we interrupt traffic? And we were like, yeah, I think that we say, hey, Vic, if you don't mind, we're probably going to take this phone call. So thank you very much, Vic Vaughn, for rolling with that, because we had a couple of seconds of silence. John,
it was an exciting broadcast moment. Yes,
yeah,
I love the action in the studio here.
Yeah, live radio. You know, you never know what you're going to get.
Yep.
She just won, and for those of you who listen to the show and listen to WGN Radio, you're familiar with John O'Malley. He is a former U.S. Marshal, Deputy Chief of the Northern District of Illinois. And anytime we have a big story that breaks and involves any sort of law enforcement. And unfortunately, it's often in tragic circumstances, and he steps up to the conversation. He was at the celebration, and he said, hey, will you do the Patty Vasquez show? And she said yes. So there you go.
Buy John O'Malley a coffee tomorrow.
You don't want to see the text. I'm like, holy crap, you just made me a rock star.
Yeah.
So thank you again to Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot for joining us on WGN Radio. And thank you guys in studio, because I know it's weird. You know, that's the thing, is that, you know, on a day like this, anything could happen. Mm-hmm. And I think there were moments in the morning where, you know, I think the media tries to figure out what's the rest of the day going to look like. You know, if it's going to be a landslide with Lori Lightfoot running away with it, mm-hmm. well, what are we going to talk about all day? So there were folks that were trying to say, well, you know, the unions might come out and they're going door to door. Now, John, I know you're a transplant. Are you registered to vote in Chicago now, or are you?
For a long time, Patty. Now, okay. Come on, don't sell me short.
No,
fact,
no.
I've been volunteering for my aldermanic candidate of choice since last summer, mm-hmm. and he was victorious in the 47th ward in the runoff.
And you're
today,
which candidate?
Matt Martin.
Okay. And what was?
I'm very proud. I like jumped on board early, I felt like, and got to sort of see this campaign through to before they even had like an office. So I feel a real sense of pride in it.
Now, when you volunteer for an alderman, you know, the thing is that people see the mayor's race and they see obviously the governor's race. They don't necessarily pay as much attention to the men and women in their districts, in their wards, who on a fundamental level can have a tremendous impact mm-hmm. on your day-to-day life, whether it's the potholes or some tree that's dying on your front lawn that you can't get rid of because it's not on your property, it's on the parkway. You know, those are the men and women that we do need to connect with more, and that's why I was asking how Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot was going to work with them. Mm-hmm. What is your sense from your candidate, from your victorious candidate in the 47?
My sense of
what his plan is for going forward for your neighborhood.
You know, he is. I think he's in league with Lightfoot in the sense that he ran as an independent-minded progressive and someone who he was an attorney in the Attorney General's office, a civil rights lawyer. And so he's someone who's experienced with government, but he brought, I feel like, fresh ideas and he wasn't married to an existing process. Now,
an outsider.
He's an outsider, yeah, but I feel like he was in the Attorney General's office at the same time.
Outside
I like the
politics.
Mix of experience and I don't know, freshness, right? I mean, it feels like such a cliche, but that's what this election cycle feels like to me, is having been here now for just half a decade, but feeling like fatigue with an existing process, the machine, I guess it's called.
Okay, well, and that's the thing, is even coming in and, you know, being here for 5 years or 6 years, you know, you still get that sense of like, since it's always been this way, do I have to put up with it going forward?
Well, can I say, like, for the first few years, it's a slow dawning of, oh, things actually work that way. You know, I love the city, but you know what I'm saying. Like,
oh, yeah,
the sort of depth of the corruption becomes evident, and you're just like, oh, it's, you know,
it's
there's some truth to the reputation.
And Paul, you were also in a ward that had a runoff.
Yeah, we had a runoff. We've had an incumbent alderman for quite some time in my district, and she won again, but it was close call. So we'll see. We'll see if she gets the spray paint off of our garage, which is an ongoing problem that we have. But has created a new joke.
Is it gangs that are tagging your garage?
It's a little of both. We just have this weird, port in an alley where kids can just hang out. I'm right by a high school. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's just kids with their highlighters, and then other times it's gang signs. And they used to always be there, but the police has done an excellent job of just monitoring it, and then also cleaning it up. We have cleanups like every and there's been some hate stuff that's been on there too.
Mm-hmm. Patty, so I don't want to turn the segment on a dime, but I know Paul has to leave, and I just have to ask him something about last week's.
I'm not letting him leave. What are you talking about? We just had Mayor like Lori Lightfoot.
Should
on
I
the
wait
line.
Till after the news then to spring this on him?
Well, hold on. Before we go,
Are you running for alderman?
No, but if I were to
we
run for alderman,
follow up.
If I were running for alderman and we had a rash of gangs tagging garages, what I've always envisioned doing is if we can't clean it up fast enough, you know, we can't get the cleaning crews there, I would behind the gang tag I would put Love's Unicorns, and
I've come up with creative stuff to put to try to get them. I put notes on. I'm like, hey guys, like, we're. Just don't do it. Like,
yeah.
You know,
hey, stop. What does your mother think of this?
A firm
like,
note.
Your tax dollars are paying for this.
And, okay.
But I'm running for alderman. No. But What would your slogan be? That's what we should do. What would it be?
Maybe we could talk about that. Well, we
don't be catty. Vote for Patty.
No,
I just got
that's
it.
No, because then there's
a winner.
Also,
okay,
there's also,
check it out.
No, I got one for Tatey too.
What's for Tatey?
Please.
Mm-hmm. I don't have it right now.
Don't be fady. Vote for Tatey.
It's the weather outside is crazy, but you've got it going right with Tatey.
No.
I love that one.
Do you?
Yes.
Okay.
Put that on the bumper sticker. It'll have to be a wide bumper sticker, yeah. But put it on there
but
anyway.
Crazy would be spelled with two E's, just to be weird.
So that is particularly crazy. Yeah. Yes.
Now, one of the things that we need to address our game.
Far with Farivar.
Our game. See, that you have it built into your name. That's, that's a good
too
one.
Too easy. Boom. Yeah.
What? I'm sorry. Pat.
We have to take a break. We have comedian Lenny Schmidt in the wings.
Yes.
We have to get to game shows, which was part of what I want to talk to John Tatey about. Well, he came in eager to talk about Pop Mom.
He told me I couldn't leave.
I know. I told you can't leave.
Well, the guests are starting to pile up now. So
it's okay.
I'll stay for the segment to hear what this
is. But there's so much
is.
I want to talk about. I haven't even gotten to the things that I want to talk about. But we had Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot on the line.
It's
with
not
us,
your so. Show. Oh, wait.
Oh, wait. It's run away from me. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show. Show more after this. Comedian Paul Farivar and John Tatey join us in the Allstate Skyline studio. On deck, we have Lenny Schmidt, and I wanted to make sure that Paul and John had an opportunity to share some of the campaign slogans that they feel Paul needs to jump in right away.
Oh, no. Yes. I just want to say you plugged his podcast, which is great, but I also want to plug the Singles Only podcast, which Patty, you and I released one yesterday with Beckett Kenny, which was amazing, if you
very
remember.
Good.
It was
yes.
very fun.
There's no need to gesticulate so wildly just to plug your podcast.
Though. No. I wasn't gesticulating. I was. I got excited.
I think it was a gesticulation. It was a hard.
There was no
pointing.
It was like this.
I feel like,
and
just,
I was also waving at Lenny at the same time. So it kind of got
two birds.
I
okay,
feel like
good.
Gesticulation has been used now more times on my show than in the entire 5 years I've been on the air.
I'm so proud.
And now I've said it, so it's complete. Paul, you had some ideas. Are these campaign slogans in general, or for
members of the studio, I think.
It's just for us.
Although I only wrote mine.
I
about
feel
Paul.
Like, given that John is a game show fan, like myself, I think we should see who's our better. And I think Patty, you should decide who's our better. We have one.
Okay.
I have two for you, and I have two for John.
Okay.
Oh, now when did this become a competition?
You said you had two.
Well, I have three, but they're all for you.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. But so, how do you want to do this? You want me to go?
Yeah, you better go first because you have right. so many.
So this one, Patty, this is if you are running on a candidacy of making marijuana legal. If you're running for alderman and you're making it illegal.
Okay.
Or making it legal.
Oh,
say,
no.
No, you're making it legal.
I know. I understand
say,
that.
Say, if you want to smoke a fatty, you have to vote for Patty. That's one.
Okay.
The second one
That's good. Oh, what, now let me jump in with one.
Okay, go ahead.
For you.
Oh, for
all
me. Right. Okay.
All of mine are for you. Paul Farivar, that is how you pronounce your last name, right, Paul?
Yes.
Okay, so this one works. Paul Farivar, he sets the bar pretty high.
Oh, that didn't even rhyme. Okay. John, I got one for you.
But he committed, and that's important as well.
If you want a candidate who's ready on day one, you have to vote for John Tatey. He's the one.
You rhymed one with itself?
Well, it's, yeah, but this is okay. That was a second best
different
one.
Senses.
I
you guys, keep in mind, you're making Lenny Schmidt.
No,
wait.
Okay, I got one more for each of you. These are the better ones for both. And then this one is your candidate on the other side is his name. We'll say is John. I don't care what candidate John says. I'm sticking with Patty Vasquez.
Oh, good.
Oh, I see. Says Vasquez. Okay.
And then
why
for
do
you,
I have to be the opponent?
Okay, go ahead. I said John. I didn't say last name. Okay, go ahead. You have one? Because I know my next one's going to win.
Paul Farivar. He's like Brett Favre, but he's an alderman instead of a quarterback.
It's not bad.
Good?
I like
right?
that. Yeah.
I mean, around here, it might not play.
Here's
but.
The one. I if we had a drum solo, it would be better, but I'll just go with this.
A drum
thank
roll.
You.
Yeah, okay.
A drum roll, yes. Whether you are, and this is the 47th ward, which you would run in. In the 47th ward, whether you're a man or a lady, make sure you go out and vote for John Tatey.
That's a good message. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
You
like
win.
That?
I'm sorry. I was late with this.
Do you want me to do it again?
No, I really don't.
So, I want to see someone have a tell a joke after a drum solo. That's what
drum
I want to see.
5 minute drum solo.
Like a metal drum solo.
It's
and then,
late.
Yeah.
I had two shows. I'm tired. And there's a lot of energy.
There was a lot of pressure.
There was no tiredness in those slogans. That was quality stuff.
I feel like mine were the best. If this was a contest, a game show, and there were buzzers and stuff, I think people would be like,
I will allow you to think that. Yes.
Well, as long as we're talking about game buzzers, yes. Let's focus for a moment on what brings us together this evening and why Paul stayed.
We were interrupted by
Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot with her. I'll talk to Patty.
I accept
Vasquez
her apology
moment.
For that. Yes, she did apologize off the air for that.
She did not. Vic, we're just going to interrupt all of your news broadcasts for the rest of the evening, not with anything important, but just because it's dramatic, I think, to just go, hey, I know you have things to say, but we would like to do a quiz now.
And way more entertaining.
We're going to interrupt it for, I have one for you too, Vic. I have a slogan
if
you're running.
I'm thinking of some for you. Yes. I thought I had one, Paul.
Oh, no, here, this
and
is easy.
It sounded like it when I wrote it down, and then I realized when I said it out loud, Czar does not rhyme with Farvar. So I'm
Czar rhymes with Farvar.
Not when you say it.
Here, I have it. Vic's is easy.
Yeah, Vic has a good easy. He has a good name.
If the same old makes you sick, you've got to vote for Vic.
Oh, yeah. I'm running for office now. I never thought about it.
I feel like Vic Vaughn is such a cool name. I think, first of all, if it is your real name, I think that that's not fair.
We've lost focus again.
I think that's your slogan. Diana Vic Vaughn is such a cool name. Put that on a poster.
There you go. I've seen worse.
Vic Vaughn.
Vic, are
the
you?
The name is real.
People have probably been elected for much less than that.
V is for victory and Vic Vaughn.
That's not good, Patty.
That's not.
No, I feel like you're just calling him in now.
Actually, my middle name is Eugene, which means my middle initial is E, and when you say it all together, it sounds like victory.
Oh.
No.
Yeah, sure it does.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you are
Vic E. Vaughn,
a full-bred or a pawn.
I didn't track on that one.
Go out there and vote for...
Okay.
Whether you are a king or a pawn,
Paul,
if you're going to think of a chess table. So in this category, the sticker is a chess table, and it says, whether you are a queen, bishop, or a pawn, your vote needs to be with Vic Vaughn.
Now, that's got some underlying meaning. I like the message.
You lose the rook vote there, though.
Okay, all right. I got to bring this back... They're
so
limited in their movement. Okay, so I need.
I'm trying to go through these wards one by one. Also, Pat, I'm going to need to step away from the desk.
Okay, Vic's got some work to do.
I got another one for you, Vic.
No, no. Okay, focus. Let Vic go. Let Vic get to work. Okay, so.
There's a professional entertainer waiting right outside the window while we giggle about this. So let's get down to business.
The reason that I've kept you both in the room together is a continuation of a conversation we were having about your March Madness game show brackets that you and your mom had created. And your mom is a rock star, by the way, the star of Pop Mom. The podcast available everywhere you listen to podcasts. And tell us about the conversation that you had with your mom afterwards.
Thank you, Patty, for coming to the point finally. Jeez, Patty over here. Yes,
I have a slogan for the game show as well. No, go ahead. I don't. I was just kidding.
As was revealed on this week's Pop Mom podcast, Mom asked me... out of the blue, she said, do you think I was too rude to that other fella? She didn't remember her name. So, you know, that guy, that good looking, that good looking fella, she said.
She's not even Midwestern.
I'm making up fella. I forget what she actually said. But
I mean, like, that she even thought about it after she left.
Paul brings that out
of people. Like, it's his... Paul, you... Come on.
No, I'm very likable. Paul.
You are, but you can also, you know, poke people in a way where they go, yes. Yeah.
When needed.
And you enjoy it.
He likes
to be slightly contentious, but not in a way that feels abrasive.
Well, and exactly what I told
him. That's my candidacy. That's my slogan.
You have to
stop. He's not abrasive.
How are you more slap happy than I am right now is my question.
I'm trying to leave so I can get food, but go ahead.
You're trying to leave? I'm trying to get my only bit of substance over, and it is that Mom was worried she was rude to you last week, but I told her I thought she was great. She was herself. She was funny. And if you agree, I will pass that along to her.
I totally agree. I had so much fun, especially because we agreed on a lot of the same things.
That's right.
She at first was hesitant because she was like, I don't know if this guy, he says he's a game show person. But then I shocked her with the knowledge I had on some of the things that I happen to know.
Well, because you didn't know who was the host of Match Game.
Well, he didn't even know Match Game existed.
Yeah, that was pre-6. Yeah, because it wasn't. We covered this already. I've already explained myself. It was before my time and then after my time because it was revamped.
It wasn't after. It's on now.
Well, yeah, they revamped it. It wasn't on during the prime
with
of
Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
During the prime of your game show.
My game show knowledge.
What I remember of our conversation last week was that Jeopardy really survived a lot of those brackets. And, you know, I've had a couple conversations over the last few weeks following this incredible statement that Alex Trebek had when he announced that he had stage 4 prostate cancer. And you mentioned before we came back on the air that you've been doing a lot of research on Alex Trebek. Tell me a little bit about that.
Penny, I'm working on a sort of podcast mini-series about Alex Trebek is sort of the quizmaster in waiting, the lesser known shows of Alex. I think people really only know him for Jeopardy at this point because that's been his main gig for so long. But I've been digging into sort of YouTube clips and just sort of video archives with episodes of like Battle Stars, this strange Hollywood Squares knockoff he hosted. This pilot called Malcolm, where he actually co-hosted the game show with this live animated wisecracking cartoon character. If you search for Malcolm Alex Trebek on YouTube, it'll come up, and it's one of the strangest pieces of television you will ever see. So Alex Trebek has sort of been through the Willy Wonka side of television, and people don't know about that. So I'm working on this podcast to flesh out his hosting career, because to me, he's been in the news lately because of his health, yes, and it hits me especially hard because to me, he's the last of the great game show hosts. You know, there's not a lot of people left who that's what it says on their business card, right? And certainly none that have hosted as many shows as this guy and as well as this guy. So I'm looking forward to paying tribute to him. I certainly wish him all the best and I'm rooting for his recovery. At the same time, I think it's a nice time to reflect on his career.
And what a great way to celebrate someone who, you know, it isn't often that we have a chance to tell someone how much they mean to us while they're with us, and regardless of how things go for Alex Trebek, and perhaps even in this, in his path that he has ahead of him, there is something really beautiful about that. So,
you know, if you go to the Jeopardy YouTube account, he posted a new message last week thanking. Apparently, hundreds of thousands of messages have come in texts and letters and whatnot, and you can tell he's moved by the response. So exactly that, Patty. People have gotten to show their appreciation for him.
I love that. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that, and when it's available,
Patty,
to let us know.
Yes. I will, of course.
Do you have a slogan, Paul?
I just want to say one last slogan I have. If Pop Mom was running in this hypothetical, she's running for alternate.
A podcast is running for office.
In the 47th.
In this scenario. Okay.
Yeah.
In the 47th. So, okay.
If you want someone who knows right from wrong, you need to vote for Pop Mom.
In the 47th.
Before you leave, Paul, and go unhinge your jaw and just scoop food into your face.
No, I'm not as hungry as that night.
That was insane. I was seriously worried about my safety. The 815 says, don't drop the ball. Vote for Paul.
Oh, I like that.
Lenny Winner. Schmidt joins us after this on 720 WGN. I am so excited. It was so much fun hanging out with comedian Paul Farvar. Great talking to John Tatey, who both were here when Lori Lightfoot took a moment during her huge celebration to... Are your headphones not working? The volume?
No, they're working fine. Yeah, they're one of, part of them working.
So it's Lenny Schmidt, who I had to delay. He was supposed to... Why are you hitting yourself in the head to make them work? Just hand him a pair of headphones from another...
No, maybe? These are fine.
Okay, there we go.
Now they're so loud. Now it's like I'm listening to Pink Floyd in my bedroom when I'm 8th grade and then lining up the line with the third roar.
Are they the ones with another brick in the wall, Paul? Which ones are they? Pink Floyd? No? Okay.
Yeah, another brick in the wall. Come on, Patty. Another brick in the wall. That was
Patty
the wall. But I'm
music.
Talking about the dark side of the moon. The third roar. Listen, the third roar with the lion, that's when you hit play and then you listen to Dark Side of the Moon. And it syncs with Wizard of Oz. Yeah. Syncs perfectly with the Wizard of Oz.
I don't understand anything that you're saying.
Right, here's what you do. First of all, we need to get high. And
that's if you want to smoke a fatty, vote for Patty.
You know, you'll be the one person if you smoke, you'll be the one person, like if you smoked a joint, your whole world would fall apart. You're like, because you have so much energy, you're running around, you have so much going on. If you smoked a joint, you'd be like, oh, this is so much better than what I've been doing for the last 25 years. And then you'll be eating. I said fudge.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
I think we're good. Yeah.
We good? Sorry. I forgot. Normally I work with podcasts. Anyway.
Okay. So here's the thing. We have a segment on the show called Patty's Appalling Lack of Musical Knowledge. And this is something you have to go through some of Paul Farvar's videos to find out more about. John's become increasingly
over. Paul's entrenched himself in this show in many ways. Yeah. He's very impressive.
Yeah, he's trying to leave, but I need him to write
a
headline.
He's not here. He's gone. He's in the subway.
Yeah, he's trying to write a headline for the podcast that I'm sharing on Facebook. We interviewed Lori Lightfoot. John and I were in the middle of a conversation when John O'Malley, law enforcement expert, was like, hey, you want to talk to the mayor-elect? And we were like, yes.
And good for you.
It was phenomenal. Unexpected. And you are a Chicago native or from the suburbs?
No, I always grew up in Bridgeport.
In Bridgeport? So I didn't
even know. Went to high school.
What block was that? What block did you grow up on?
It was 34th and Bell, sweetheart. How are you?
I'm good.
Right near Archer and Damon, right there.
We're learning more about the South Side of Chicago, John.
Are we?
Yes, we are.
I was right by old Daly's place. Daly was closer to Comiskey, but I was just up. 34th.
And that's the thing is that this is such a strange night. Growing up, would you think that we would have black woman, openly gay mayor of Chicago?
No, I'm always shocked when I come back here. Yeah, I'm amazed. I think it's great. I think it's phenomenal. It's a huge. It's great. It's a great thing that the world needs to move forward and everybody changes. The fact that Chicago has a mayor that's black and a woman and openly gay, I think that gives the rest of the world, the rest of the country hope. You know what I mean?
Well, especially.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if you get this, John, as somebody who's moved to Chicago, if your family and friends, especially in the last week or so, or maybe over the last couple of years, just call you and go, what the hell is going on in Chicago? That seems to be, you know, what people say a lot. And tonight it seems like, oh, maybe Chicago's not so bad.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading tonight in the New York Times about the Chicago mayoral elections, and they had a paragraph where they said that, yes, it was historic, but there was also a sense in the city, by this reporter's reckoning, that people were kind of shrugging it off because Chicago has made history before with a woman becoming mayor and black mayor, and that it's sort of taken for granted. I was surprised by that take, and it sounds like you guys don't concur with that, that it does feel like a historic night to you as longtime residents of the city.
I grew up in a neighborhood that when Mayor Washington was running, there were kids in grade school chanting things like, Epton, Epton, he's our man because we don't want no African. And my neighborhood voted 76% against Mayor Washington. And not just that, but when he tried to campaign in our neighborhood, it wasn't just kids yelling things. Adults were yelling things at him and drove him out of the neighborhood. And I never would have. The kind of things that people say, that I heard growing up, you know, I never would have imagined. Even Washington, when he won, it was contentious. And now it feels like a lot of people were on the Lori Lightfoot train.
Yeah.
Well, I think
otherwise, get out of the way was what it was. I mean, and Tony didn't move fast enough.
Which is great, because I think as we go on and we evolve and we move forward, everything's changing. You know what I mean? Everything is changing. And for the fact that Chicago has something like that to happen is really hugely significant. That's and huge.
It is. It's incredible. And I want to thank you, John, for hanging out with us tonight. You seem to know better than I did that it might be kind of a jumble, a lot of different things going on, a lot of moving parts.
It's
and you're
night.
always so patient. You've been a regular guest of the show. As Lenny and I have known each other for 20 years. So you're coming later to the party and seeing the crazy unfold over the last 5 years. Lenny's pretty familiar.
I'm pretty familiar.
Yeah, you seem to be you caught it pretty fast.
I just like to watch Patty deal with it all. It's amazing. She's like the wizard behind the curtain. There's fingers flying and buttons. I remember when she started this gig and it was all like, what button do I push for who I want? And now she's just bing, 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 bing. People come in, out the door. She's greeting people outside. It's amazing. I don't think she ever sleeps. I don't think she ever sleeps.
Well, the wizard behind the curtain. See, it all syncs up again.
It's
we like got to do this.
I think
he's right, by the way.
All right.
This is a classic pop culture nugget. I don't know how it was discovered. That's part of the lore of it. Who figured this out the first time? The Pink Floyd Wizard of Oz sync.
Oh, I don't know thing. Who did it, but I watched it once with the third roar thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah, it works.
It's pretty consistent. Yeah, it's
I'll only amazing. Do it if your mom does it with me. I'll get high with your mom.
Good luck.
Pop Mom is available wherever you listen to the podcast. John, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Patty. It was fun.
You were here. Congratulations. On thank you so yeah. much, and that was a lot of fun. And it was a lot of support from you and Paul looking at me like, you know, you're doing good. Stop shaking. Thank you so much. And follow him on Twitter at John Tatey, T-E-T-I. I will see you next week.
Thanks, Patty. See you next week.
I have you on my calendar. More on 720 WGN. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show, and we are in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Joining me is comedian, actor, and one of my favorite human beings on the planet, Lenny Schmidt.
Favorite human beings?
Yeah.
That's a huge compliment.
There's so many memories that I have of starting out doing comedy in Chicago, but I've told you this so many times. Just, I think it was Marge's. Where did Kevin, there was a comic from Florida. With Kevin Rogers. Where did Kevin Rogers bartend? Wasn't it Marge's?
Oh, jeez.
It was not that far from Zany's.
No, it wasn't that far. It was, I can't remember the name
like
of the place.
It was on a corner. It was an old joint.
Yeah. I can't remember.
But we would have these, you know, you, me, Patty Nelson. I think we even hung out there one time with Tom Clark. I have this really stupid memory of like moments in time.
Yeah. And I have those. Same thing where there's moments you're like, oh, I remember.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking tonight, the new Zany's intro shows a video. They do a video, and they show a bunch of stuff. And at one point, they showed a clip from one of the festivals from 98.
Oh, yes.
Which was maybe the best festival ever, period, mm-hmm. in any comedy festival ever. And that was one that Dan ran and Kevin ran out of Chicago, out of Zany's. And they ran it for 2 or 3 years, and then they didn't get any funding after that. But that one year we did, it was Doug Stanhope, it was Mitch Hedberg, it was Sarah Silverman. It was also, that was the year that Bob Zmuda brought back Tony Clifton for the first time ever live.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I was there, and John McClellan. I mean, it was a huge, the roster of talent in that show was phenomenal.
You know who was on my showcase, because it was the Fresh Faces showcase?
Yeah.
It was Dwayne Kennedy and Daniel Tosh.
That's good. See, that's great. I always like to hear that. I tell that story, I go, all these people moved on to do better things. Not me, but these people.
These guys
have done huge. They all have their own shows and production companies. You know, me, I'm just, you know, I'm taking gigs going, yes, I'm in. I'm available.
Yes. So what day? The 5 days in a row for
my July's full? Perfect.
Well, and that's the thing about comedy, and Rick Hewitt, who owns Zany's, you know, he said, look, it takes a while to get it because you're so eager to keep, you know, seeing your calendar booked months out, right? You know, I would look at my calendar and go, okay, I'm still going to be a comic in July.
Yeah.
That was so exciting to me. And he goes, it's feast or famine.
It is feast or famine. And then, I do the same thing now. I'm 54. I've been doing this 30 years. And this is how I pay the bills. All I do is stand up. That's how I pay the bills. So, I'm still only 4 months out. I mean, I do a lot of cruise ships.
Mm-hmm.
So Norwegian goes about a year ahead. So I got dates late this year for Norwegian, but Carnival only does a couple of months. So it's still the same kind of vibe. I remember filling the calendar was the whole gig. If you filled 3 months, you're like, oh, look at that. I'm great. I was 3 months, I'm working solid, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? You don't think about the repercussions of that, you know, with life and, you know, family and all the other stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, and the travel alone, you know, of being out there by yourself. And you mentioned family. You have to make choices.
Yeah. No, you got to totally make choices. And then like a lot of guys, I know, like I do the cruise ships. So a lot of guys do the cruise ships are guys that have families because the cruise ships, you know, they're good. They pay good. They take care of us. You know what I mean? So, but you got to go out, but you got to get in with the right cruise line, and now it's almost like a corporate gig, and you do these gigs, and it's different. It's different than when you were in your 20s, and you go, I'm going to break all the rules, and I'm going to get my own show, and I'm going to do this. And I just had a conversation with somebody recently where I said, the key to this business, the key to anything in show business is you find a variation, you find a way to make money doing what you like. And then as you continue, the longer you stay in the business, you find a way to keep making money, performing and doing what you like. And at the end of it, I don't think anybody is doing what they wanted to do.
Right.
No one is going, oh, I'm doing exactly what I want to do. If you are, you're really lucky. But if you're still in the business and you're making money and you're making a living and you're paying your bills, you've won. People always say, what does it mean to make it? I go, there is no make it, really, I think. It's just about surviving and paying your bills and being around and living, you know, and paying and doing this stuff. You know what I mean?
And when you were in your 20s, you started out in Chicago?
Yeah.
Were you?
Well, no. I started in L.A. I moved from Chicago.
Uh-huh.
I graduated from high school in Bolingbrook and moved to L.A. I was around 19, 20, and I started doing I was in the pizza business. Worked for Little Caesars for like 3 years. I ran, before I did comedy, I ran all the Little Caesars in like Orange County. I ran like 12 Little Caesars. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was way too young I wasn't ready for any of it. They were doing a corporate growth thing and I wasn't ready for it, and it came, and suddenly I'm in charge of 13 stores and I'm 22, and it was a lot of pressure. But I always wanted to be and eventually I started doing comedy and weeded my way out of Little Caesars, and I quit Little Caesars and did side jobs like cooking jobs. And then you do, like, I don't know what it was like here, like in LA, I know it was like you did comedy and then you did all these crappy jobs.
Oh, yeah. No, you know, we definitely.
Every crappy job.
Waiting tables.
I've cleaned carpets. I've done everything you can think of. I've done them all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the first few years of doing stand-up, you're not good. You know what I mean? You're kind of good. You're like, you have moments where you're like, wow, that was awesome. And then you have weeks of going, oh, that all sucked. And then, you know, you balance it out.
Well, and you don't have anything yet, so everything that you write, and then if it lands, you feel incredible. But when you have a lot of material, you have that sort of crossroads of, what do I get rid of? What do I need to generate new material? Am I staying relevant, you know?
Yeah, also, well, I think part of it, too, is that you understand your voice. It takes you years to find your voice.
Right.
Like, what you're going to do. You know, there's plenty, like, and my brother's a comic, too. So there's plenty of times where one of us will write a joke, the other one will write a joke, and this is good for you, it's not good for me, blah, blah, blah. The longer you're doing it, the more you understand, like you do now. You know exactly what joke you should tell. And you might hear, yeah, but you might, but even if you don't, and you hear one that's wrong, there's plenty of times where I hear plenty where I'll do one where I think it's funny to me, but I'm smart enough to listen and go, it won't fit in my act.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, that's the weirdest thing is when you write a joke, and especially now that we can put it on social media, right? If you put a one-liner out there.
Sure, yeah.
And it gets a great response. You're like, okay, that's a clever joke. I wrote a good joke.
Yeah.
And I actually sold these greeting cards that, there's a comic in Seattle, compendium cards. A bunch of us wrote these jokes. And it says, the card, it's a humorous card. The creator of Spanx is a billionaire. And on the inside, it says, of course she is, because bacon and donuts are delicious. So it's a clever joke, but you know that's not going to work for me on stage.
Right, right.
At all. It just doesn't fit.
Right, right.
But it makes you crazy, and you're like, oh, I see, I'm not that kind of writer.
Yeah, but I don't know if it makes you crazy so much. Like, I don't know, it's hard to describe. Because, like, the longer I've been in this business, the more I understand that it's just to be in the moment and perform and do what you want to do. Like, one of the biggest regrets I have, and I do a lot of cruise ships, I really miss acting. I miss that vibe. I miss that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I miss auditioning. I miss acting.
You miss auditioning?
Yes.
I never cracked that nut.
Oh, I loved auditioning.
I mean, I've gotten parts, but you've gotten roles on True Blood. We've seen you on Big Love. Joe Dirt. You have a long list of being a great character.
I've been lucky. My body of work I've been very lucky. I have no gigs where I'm like, oh, I hate that gig. I mean, I have performances I hate. I'm like, oh, I could have done better. But, you know, there's no gig I'm like, I don't want to talk about. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's one audition I had, I was never happy to not get, was the Empire, Empire Carpets?
Yes.
They had a commercial, it was around Easter, it was a spring sale, and it was a bunch of guys, you're supposed to be dressed in an Easter Bunny.
I remember that ad.
Yeah. You're supposed to be dressed. You don't make any payments for 3 days, and it's like a variation of the Easter hop, whatever, and I was up for it, and they go, well, we're pretty sure you got it. I'm like, oh, I really don't want this gig so bad, I don't want it. And then they call me, oh, you didn't get it. I'm like, I was never happy to not get a gig. Then that gig was, oh, I really don't want to wear a bunny costume and hop around and go for 3 days. I mean, you know what I mean? So I don't have anything in my body of work that I look at and go, oh, I really hate that. So I've been lucky that all that stuff I have is pretty good.
Is it the cruise ships? Is it doing more comedy that's pulling you away from being able to audition in L.A.? And I know your daughters moved back here with their mom, so that's a big...
Yeah, they're here now, and the oldest is moving in with me in a couple months.
She's moving to Los Angeles?
Yeah, she graduates from high school in May, and she's already accepted to Valley College, so she's going to go to Valley College and move in with me in July.
Okay.
So we're doing a big cross-country drive and all this stuff. Yeah, so, and we... And she... I got to give her credit, man, for 17... She really has it together.
Is she your younger daughter? Is the one that apparently likes being grounded?
Yeah, she's grounded again. I just spent this morning taking the door off her bedroom and putting in the garage, and that's part of her grounding.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry. You took the door off her...
Yeah, you take a door off her bedroom so she has no privacy, okay, because we can't trust her.
See,
so.
I shared a room with my mom.
Yeah?
So I don't...
You share a room with your mom now?
No, when I was growing up. Right. I shared a room with my mom, and then I had to share a bunk bed with my dad.
Okay.
So I don't have any... Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, she has... The words you're using are not... Well, kids today have their own room, and then they get in their own room, and they have their own phone, and they're off in their own world.
So if you ground them, it's not really... I mean, I've heard that before, yeah, where it doesn't make any difference.
Well, I was really mad, because a lot of what happened... In the last, like yesterday, something happened, and something happened Sunday. Because I've been
in town.
Do
you want to talk about it? Because I got to take a break.
Okay, take a break. You want to take a break?
You can decide. I want to give you a moment to decide whether.
I don't want to bury her on the internet. I don't want to bury her on the radio, but it's not good.
Oh boy, it's dad. Oh boy, Lenny just went dad on us.
I'm sorry.
It's comedian Lenny Schmidt. He's performing at Zany's all week. Zany's on Wells. You can go to Zany's.com for all the showtime information. But I know that it's going to be 8 o'clock Wednesday, Thursday, two shows
I'm
Friday.
I'm not there Thursday.
He's not there
Thursday. Here's the deal. I couldn't do Thursday, so I called my friend Jeff Garland to fill in for me. So
That was nice of him to step up.
He's going to cover Thursday for me and Sunday, because I can't do either of those.
And
I'll be in Rosemont Thursday. So and then next week, I'm in Rosemont all week.
Oh, excellent.
But Jeff was nice enough to step up and cover. He's also shoveling my driveway tomorrow.
He's a good Chicago guy. Yeah,
he's a great Chicago guy.
Yeah, he doesn't, you know, he just put some snow out there. He'll take care of it. Lenny Schmidt at Zany's all week except for Thursday and Sunday, where he'll be at Zany's in Rosemont. So Zany's in Old Town. Go to Zany's.com. They have all the information there. More in a moment with Lenny Schmidt on the Patty Vasquez Show, 720 WGN. Comedian and actor Lenny Schmidt and dad Lenny Schmidt is in studio with me. And yeah, you were asking if we carry the White Sox now on WGN Radio. I have been trying to... there's this weird thing that happens when you are a lifelong Cubs fan. And then you go, you know, I don't know if this is... It's not religion. And even religion, you get to take a step back and question your faith.
Right.
Don't you?
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, of course. And you should. As you get older, you should question everything.
You should question everything. Right. And I just, the team that I grew up loving, and it did start my sort of questioning the Cubs as an organization when they left WGN Radio. It wasn't like we got rid of them. There was a deal on the table, and WGN went, that we can't afford that.
Right.
And I thought, okay, well, the Cubs aren't on WGN Radio. That's weird. And then a lot of other things happened. But then when they decided to leave WGN TV, I don't know why, for me, I was like, no.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, it's a business decision. And that's fair. It's their club. They
sure.
can do whatever they want.
Right.
And I thought, wait, I work at a station that carries the Chicago White Sox. You know, they are often going to be a lead into my show. I should want them to do well, because then I do well. That would be a business decision for me.
Right.
So I started wearing a White Sox hat, which was very hard for me to do.
Wow, really? You went that far?
Yes.
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't wear a Cub hat for business.
People were telling me it was really hard to look at. Like, it doesn't
I remember
make any
seeing
sense.
Some Facebook pictures of you with Sox hats, knowing it was a business thing.
Yeah.
But I saw it and I thought it was a victory for me. I was like, oh, look, she's coming over to the good side. She's coming to the good side.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm struggling with it a little bit. So I'm going to go watch the Kane County Cougars this summer, I think is what I'm going to do.
That's cool. That's always good. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, like, I do, like, Sox, you know, I mean, the Sox are... They're rebuilding, you know, they're going, they're where the Cubs were maybe about 5 years ago.
Right. It takes a while.
Yeah, it does. And also, I'm really happy with the Sox. You know what? They got dealt some blows with the injuries with the pitchers. Kopech and the other guy, those injuries threw them back, I think, a year.
That's what
these other kids, Eloy and some of these other kids, I love that team.
Are you know? Are you going to any games while you're here?
I'm thinking about going to opening day this week because I'll be in town this week. But more than likely, I might wait till Saturday because here's like the advantage to the Sox not playing well is that the tickets are ridiculously cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So for opening day, they're like $40. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe. But then Saturday, they're back down to $5. I go, oh, good. I'll go buy a ticket for $5.
And the food's great.
Yeah, the food's phenomenal always. Yeah. So I'll go. I might go Saturday, or I might take the kids Monday night.
When you were growing up, what's your team? What's your team as a kid? Because when Ron Kittle was hitting them out over the on the roof, you know, that was a great summer.
Sure.
You know, when I was a kid, at least.
Well, when I grew up, my dad was a Cub fan. And even though we grew up on the South Side, which is weird, we grew up right in really 34th and Bell. We were real close to the park. My dad was a huge Cub fan. So I grew up a Cub fan. So I was a Cub fan till 76. And in 76, what happened was they got the Cubs got rid of Manny Trio. They got rid of Bill Madlock. They got rid of a lot of guys. Rick Monday. The guy, and I was like, I was mad. And Dave Kingman was there around the same time. And I go, if Dave Kingman, if they ever get rid of Dave Kingman, that's, I'm done. I can't be a Cub
fan. So you had a deal breaker.
Yeah. But at the same time, it was 77 and the Sox and the Southside Hitmen and Richie Zisk, the shirt I'm wearing now, the Richie Zisk and Chet Lemon and all the stuff that was going on the Southside. And I became a Sox fan immediately. And from 77 on, I've been a Sox fan.
Did you play Little League?
No, I tried out for Little League.
Who tries out for Little League?
I was bad.
They
I
made
did.
You try out?
No, I was so bad. I got cut twice. I tried out twice and didn't make it. I tried it once for high school, and I didn't make it. Yeah, apparently I'm not a good baseball player.
That's all right. Well, you shouldn't have to try out for Little League.
I did.
Pay your $40.
I was the only guy that didn't make that team. That's how bad I was. I was the only guy.
The only tryout we had one year at Norwood Park was like the coaches were going to pick their teams, and I knew where I was. I mean, I was the only girl on the team.
Right.
So, it was kind of the pity pick.
Right.
And I had to split a game. Like it was, I got like 3.5 innings out of a 7-inning game. You know,
I got cut. We played. It was Hoyne Park. I remember where it was at. It was Hoyne Park on the South Side, right near that woods. There's an L stop there now.
Right.
There's a park there. That's where I tried out, and they cut me. I was the only kid that got cut. I was the only kid that left.
Now, when you started watching the Sox, you know, because Comiskey was a rough park. I mean, it was.
Oh, it was a bar. It was a huge bar. I loved it. From 77 till they moved, it was a great place to hang out and go. I mean, it was just chaos.
Yeah.
And there was, you could go there and get people, you could see Harry drunk in the hallway and, you know, there was all kind, and Bill Vec, even after Bill Vec sold the team, you could see him in center field. I met him and Mary a bunch of times because we used to hang out in center field and left-right center, right, like that area back there. And Bill Vec always sat in the center field bleachers. So I would see him. I met him and Mary there. And he had the wooden leg with the ashtray carved in his leg and that stuff. Yeah. And that's where I met. That was after he sold the team to Einhorn and Reinsdorf.
Right.
You know, but he still came to the games. And that place was it was just a mess. I mean, there were fights there. I mean, you know, I would walk through and there'd be fights left and right. And you just have to duck and try to survive and, you know, and get through. And it was great, though. I loved it.
It's the South Side.
And it was a total. And this was the games were on Channel 44. Uh-huh. And it was at the time Harry was there. Harry was there, who was the guy? Jimmy Pearsall was his color guy. And they would do the announcement. And they would announce, and they would show a shot from the side of the wall. And it would show the steam coming in, you know, the way the smoke rolled in. It was just a weird vibe to watch a game on 44. And at that time, Harry was drinking while he was and Jimmy was drinking. And they all got in trouble at the end because they said things about the players' wives or whatever. Jimmy said something about the players'
wives. I had
wives.
No idea.
You didn't know about this?
No.
Google it. It's like, Jimmy said something about the players' wives, and that's how he got fired.
Oh, boy.
You can't even repeat it.
You got to break some rules now and then, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, right. And then Harry ended up leaving, and then that's when Harry moved to the North Side and eventually became a Cubs guy, which was a slight to, God, I don't know if anyone remembers this. It used to be Jack Brickhouse and Milo Hamilton that did the Cubs games.
I don't remember Milo, but I know Jack Brickhouse.
Well, Milo was this Pittsburgh guy that came here and was color for Brickhouse. And then Brickhouse, at the time, Brickhouse would leave for 3 innings and do the radio, and Milo would handle the TV. Well, Milo thought he was going to get that gig when Jack retired. He thought he was going to get it for sure.
Yeah.
The Harry thing came out of the blue. And there's an actual video where you can see a shot of Milo's face when they go, the new voice of the Cubs is Harry Carey. And I was like, and it catches him totally off guard. And he leaves shortly after that. He leaves not too long after that and goes because he thought he was going to get that gig. And then Harry became Harry. For
sure,
the Cubs, which became a thing. You know what I mean?
He became his own empire.
Yeah. And he was big with the Sox before, but he became a mecca star with the Cubs. Because the Cubs at the time, this is back before, you know, before technology the way it is now. There were three major teams in baseball. There was the Braves, the Cubs, and the Mets. Those are the three teams that were on cable 24 hours constantly, always. And the Cubs more so than any.
And superstations, right?
That, yeah, I mean, superstations. That's what you mean by superstations. WOR, right.
TBS,
and then WGN. And those three carried the games everywhere. So those teams everywhere, people would watch those teams everywhere. So there were a lot of Cub fans, or a lot of Met fans, a lot of Braves fans. And the Cubs always had this whole magic with them because they hadn't won, and the 100 years of losing and love of losers and all this stuff. And then they became where they are now, which is, you know, they were won a World Series. They're a great team, and they're huge. But at that time, yeah, there were games. I remember Jack Prickhouse doing games, and they were not good. You know, they were not good
right.
team.
Oh, God, no.
You know, I was supposed to go to the 23-24 game, the Philadelphia Phillies game, which, and one of the greatest calls ever is Jack Prickhouse at the bottom of the first inning. The Phillies go up 9-0, and Ron Reed hits a home run, the pitcher, and Jack Prickhouse, a home run, deep right field. Oh, come on! A home run by the pitcher? Come on, guys! And then that whole game ended up being 24-23. It was chaos. The game was chaos.
I'm so happy you're here, Lenny.
I dig you.
More stories with Lenny Schmidt when we come back on 720 WGN.
Today, Chicago baseball, Chicago hockey on WGN Radio. First, the last away game before the home opener. It's the Sox in Cleveland again. Adam Hogue's got the pregame at 11:35. Ed and DJ with the first pitch at 12:10. And later, one last battle this season between the Blackhawks and the Blues. Pregame at 6:30, John and Troy at 7. The baseball flagship.
Got him, Sox win.
The hockey flagship.
Hawks win!
The place to come for Chicago sports, 720 WGN.
It is time for our news. More conversation with Lenny Schmidt. If you have any questions or comments or want to join us in any way, we would love to hear from you. Yes, Lenny? You didn't think your mic was on.
I didn't know if I was on.
Yeah.
I was just growling to see what would happen. Yes, I'm here.
I saw you lean in. I get excited.
I see a red light, I get crazy. Sorry.
So do I, as many will attest to. The White Sox home opener is this Thursday, and of course, a lot of our hosts will be at the park. I know Steve Cochran's going to be out there, Bill and Wendy, John Williams. I'm going to go a little bit later.
Do they need someone to carry their bags while they're there? Because I'll do it.
I'll look into it.
Look into it, because I'll do it. They don't have to pay me nothing.
I went last year, and it snowed.
Yeah,
it wasn't
that.
Big snow. It was flurries.
Still.
It's Chicago.
That's Chicago baseball. Yeah. That's Chicago opening day.
It is.
Always like... Yeah, it's snowing. Oh, it's not. Oh, okay, we're going to play. Shovel out the field. Remember those days where they're trying to get the snow out of the field?
Oh, man. I remember I played at Lane Tech. I was a softball player. And you're afraid to hit the ball when it's that cold.
Yeah.
Because it's going to sting so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I really should hit this ball, but it's going to hurt.
Like, the hit doesn't hurt as much. Like, a foul ball is what kills you.
Yeah.
Hitting something off the thing, you're like, ah!
It goes into your bones, like, all the way up your arms. Lenny Schmidt joins us. He is performing at Zany's on Wells in Old Town this week. Thursday and Sunday, however, he'll be in Rosemont. You can go to Zany's.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And enjoy
the show. I can't do it. I'm strict to my contract.
Yeah, so Jeff Carlin must fill in with
Jeff.
Yeah,
he's got to fill in for it. Yeah. Yeah. They called a kid named Jeff. What's his name? Jeff Hunt?
Some guy.
Some kid.
Lenny is also, I thought of you and a bunch of my friends who are comics on cruise ships. I know Nate Weatherup has been doing cruise ships.
Yeah, I saw
Dolby
that.
Maxwell.
I haven't worked with him much. I saw Dolby at a port, but I didn't work with him on a ship yet.
And then last week there was it a Norwegian that was trapped and they were airlifting passengers?
Oh, no, it was a Viking ship.
It was a Viking.
Yeah.
And
did you see the video from that?
I did, and I had to stop because it made me one nervous for you guys. I don't know. Can you watch that kind of thing?
Yeah, I can watch it because I've never been on a ship where it's been that bad. Usually the captains are smart enough to, they know. Because you can read the weather reports. They know, oh, there's going to be a problem. Let's not, whatever. But this Viking thing was like an anomaly. It was a weird surge that came from the west. And the captain was like, we didn't expect it. And the wind came. And then what happened was that I think that ship lost power, which meant which meant they couldn't. They have a thing called, I think it's called stabilizers, mm-hmm. that they use to balance out when you're in the water. So if you have no power and you can't power the stabilizers, that ship is just a giant chunk of metal floating around the ocean.
That's what it looked like.
Right,
from
that's
the
what
deck.
It was. Right, so,
and you like all the furniture and people are trying to hold on.
That's
to
why
things.
They had to get people out of there. So they had no choice. So once the power dies and you're just a big chunk of metal in the water, you're like, okay, we got to go.
Now and because Dobie will often talk about the drills. How often do you have to do a drill when you're on a cruise
we
ship?
Do a drill like they vary with different ones. Carnival has a thing where you do a twice. They do a drill every week, and I usually do one a month with them. And then with Norwegian, the rule is every time you get on the ship, you do the first drill, and then I don't do the second.
Do they give you any responsibilities as somebody who's
no,
a regular?
No, we have none.
I was going to say.
That's the thing about the drill that's the funniest is like you put on your life jacket and you go to your little safety area and then you sit there for 45 minutes.
Okay.
That's it. That's the whole, you're like, okay, so what do we do now? Like, you just wait till the drill's over. I'm like, okay, well, why? And they're like, because this is the drill. I go, yeah, but I'm not really doing anything. They're like, why do I have to be here? And then, well, you have to because it's a rule, and you're like, okay, whatever, fine. So you sit there, and that's it. You literally do nothing. There have been times where I've sat in an entire, like, one of our, it's called a muster station. That's where they send you if there's trouble. So you go to the muster station, and it's just me in a huge theater. There's no one there. I'm sitting there, me, life jacket, middle of the room, just looking around, waiting for the announcement to tell you can go, you can do whatever.
Now, the first few times you did the drill, were you taking it seriously? Because I'm the kind of person on a plane, I'll still take the emergency instructions out of the seat pocket in front of me and go through it and look at the flight attendant. I like to give them eye contact, like, because I know no one else is paying any attention.
Right.
Is there ever a moment where at the beginning, all right, I'm taking this seriously?
Well, I do, because... Because you got to know what's going to happen if there's trouble. You know what I mean? You have to. There was a couple. And you know what? They have different types of drills. There's sometimes where they have a drill where they have the Coast Guard on board for the drill.
Oh.
And then.
How do you not take it seriously?
Yeah. The Coast Guard walks around, will ask you questions. They'll put you on the spot. They go, I need to know. And they ask you obscure questions. So we're at one point, we're at a muster station. And they had, sometimes they take you go to the muster station. And then they move you to the crafts. Which means you're on the side of the ship, which is where the crafts are. And so if there is trouble, that's where you're at. And then you get on the craft and you drop the craft and that's your evacuation ship or whatever. So most of the time you go to the station and then sometimes they go, you can just go. But a lot of times they go, we're going to finish the drill. You got to go to the craft where your craft is. And you know your boat number, where to go. And you show someone, one day we're at the craft. It's me and like eight other people. And Coast Guard shows up and they start asking questions for the boat. And nobody knows any questions. So I'm answering the questions. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's eight flares you have to have eight flares and then 12 and the thing. And you have 5 miles of water. And I'm nailing the questions. I don't know how I'm nailing these questions because I've done enough drills. Because here's the thing, like the crew, they get on a ship and they do a drill and they do it occasionally. For us, for comics, seems like we do a drill every week. We're on a ship.
Of course.
Because we're on a different ship. You know what I mean?
Right.
So they show up and they go, you have to do the drill. I'm like, I just did the drill last week. All right, fine. So you show up, but sometimes more than they do. Mm-hmm. And you just answer the questions.
Right, because they rotate through. You're there all the time.
Yeah, and if they're on the ship for 8 months at a time, sometimes, like some of the ships, you don't have to do a drill for like three or four times in a row. Carnival's a little different. They have a whole different structure. They have a four different drill thing. Mm-hmm. Two of the drills are only certain people, safety people, and then two of the drills are all crew. And that's the ones everybody goes to.
Right.
And you go to all those. And those are pretty organized. You show up, you go to the right boat, they tell you where to go. And it makes sense. They should know that stuff.
Right.
I would say they should know it all.
How are passengers during all this?
Well, it's funny. They give them an option. They go, well, you can do the drill if you want, or you can go and do whatever you want to do.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I thought it was for the passengers. Like it was mandatory for them.
No, no. Well, it is. You know, the passengers have a mandatory drill every time we leave port. So when you, let's say day one, you get on the ship in Miami, let's say Miami, you get on the ship. Before you can leave, you have to have a safety drill for all of the guests. So all of the guests know where their muster station is and where their muster craft is.
Okay.
So they do this drill for everyone for that particular day, the first day. And then when they're done, and then that's it, then they don't have to drill again. But the crew has to do a drill every week. And it really makes sense if you think about it, because if it hits the fan, the crew's the one's got to step up and save things.
Of course.
If you're a guest, you're on the ship for a week and you're leaving. But if you're on the crew, you're on the ship for 8 months at a time. So you need to know, you know, what's going to happen. But every time you take a, every single time you take a cruise, you have to take a drill the first day.
Okay.
And they take you to a muster station, and they show you where to go and all this stuff. And once you get that out of your system, you're done. But then when they have a crew drill, they tell the guests, they go, you have an option to do this drill as well.
And how many passengers do that?
None. Zero. None.
Yeah, who wants?
Because it's always in a port. It's always like we're in, you know, we're in Belize, and people are doing whatever they want. And they go, if you guys want to hang out, people are leaving. They don't care. You know, they're out the door because they're only there for 7 days. Even the guests don't take the first drill really seriously. I do a whole bunch of jokes about it. We're like, you guys don't really. You really need to pay more attention.
Yeah.
Because things, someday something will
happen. Showing that video of the Viking ship.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, there's plenty of ships. Yeah, there's plenty of things. Where there've been a few ships where things have gone wrong. Maybe you should be aware of where to go if there is trouble.
But it's just a big buffet on the ocean. That's,
yeah, they don't care. They
got a water slide. They got a water slide. They got a putt green.
It's even tougher with like a 3-day cruise because they're so drunk. It's funny with the 3-day cruise.
They're so drunk, did you say?
Oh, they're so bad. Yeah, on a 7-day cruise, like when they do the drill, they do the announcement. They go, hey, everyone, everything's going to be closed, the bars and everything, and you have to do this drill. And then they go, folks, you got to show up for the drill. And then if you don't show up, they go, folks, we know you're not all here because we have a ticker, a spinner, whatever, a counter. Also, we're on the bridge and we can see the patios and you're on your patios and you're hiding and we're, I mean, they know, they're aware of what's going on. And in a 3-day cruise, people just don't care. They just get drunk and it literally is like an hour of people going, people, seriously, let's go to the, if you don't go to the drill, we can't leave. So let's go. So people are showing up and they're drunk and they're annoyed. And like, I feel bad for the crew because they have to get people to pay attention. And people are just really, when do we drink again? Just please, let's be quiet.
They don't even have a chance to sober up. But
no, they're so hammered on a 3-day cruise. 3-day cruises are the worst. And they're the worst.
And you have to do, are these the ships where as a comic, you have to have a clean set and a dirty set?
Or? Yeah, all the ships you have to have a clean and a dirty. So Carnival has, like, they vary. Like I do, on Carnival, I do 6 different shows. Mm-hmm. So I rotate, I have 3 different clean shows and 3 different adult shows. And then I just rotate whatever they need. And Norwegian is mostly clean.
When they say they want a dirty show, do they ever tell you, that's a little too, it's not dirty enough?
So, you know what, sometimes, you know, people like to push this, and I always hate this, people will do this, tonight it's dirty, we're going to get filthy.
Yeah.
I'm like, don't tell people that. I'm not filthy. You know what I mean? I talk about adult subjects.
You don't get how that makes us feel. I don't know if I can't tell you the story on the air, but I mean, not the whole story.
It's my favorite story.
I know, right? but there was a comedy club that promoted me as being X-rated. And exactly, and yeah. I said,
"I'm not X-rated. Please don't do that."
And then I'll tell you off the air what I told the audience because at that point I'm already being promoted that way, and apparently people are. Yeah. I mean, like, what does that mean? Here's a female comic, you know, what direction is this going to go in? And I called my manager, Rick Hewitt, and I said, "Hey, I'm working this club, and they're promoting me." What had happened was there was a suburban club, and that manager felt that I was dirtier than her audience. She wanted to make sure that they knew that I might talk about things that were.
So she made the decision? That was brilliant.
And then when I went to the urban club, the title stayed with me. So I called my manager, Rick Hewitt, and I go, hey, there's this club promoting me as X-rated. He goes, oh, who is it? I'll give them a call. I go, it's your club. It's Zanies on Wells. And
is it really? When did that happen?
Cindy Nelson had promoted my show in St. Charles as, she would be like, well, you know, they're a little more conservative out here. So I just want to make sure that they knew you were going to talk about going through childbirth and getting pregnant and all that stuff. Yep.
Yeah, that is not.
You've seen my show. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm always amazed when people do that.
Because as women, John Panette told me one time, he goes, I get it. He goes, you could be doing a completely clean set, but no matter what you say, people are always going to think you're saying something dirty.
Yeah.
He told me I should do a whole bit about, you know, would you like to buy some of my daughter's Girl Scout cookies? You filthy slut, you're disgusting. You know. And it's true. Whenever, I mean, even I have this sort of stigma about me. That's fine. Whatever. But I've had shows where they, have you ever had this where they tell you do the dirtiest material, you know, that we hired you for, and you start doing it and it doesn't go well. And I've had this, and the guy who books me goes, go back to the clean stuff.
Ah, that's funny.
From the audience.
No, I used to rate one show on Carnival NC-17 as my filthy show, my extreme show or whatever. And I did it once or twice, and I go, after doing it two or three times, I go, this is terrible. I go, 20 minutes into my show,
right,
it's all filth, and I'm like, I don't want to do that. I like to mix it up a little bit. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
If I throw in anything that's considered filth, I like to throw it in here and there. I don't like to have a whole show about being disgusting. You know what I mean?
Right. And the thing is that people will see a clip on YouTube, whatever, if someone with their cell phone has recorded us, which is never fun.
Right. Yeah, right.
And then you have to explain, I can do church shows. I've performed in churches.
Sure.
And I can do a third show Saturday, which sometimes, in order to keep their attention, just like they ask you to do on the cruise ships,
yeah,
is with the 3-day drunks.
Sure.
You gotta show them something shiny.
Yeah, right. shiny. Squirrel! Yeah, squirrel. Right. Exactly.
We are hanging out with comedian Lenny Schmidt. He's performing at Zany's on Wells Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. He'll be in Rosemont on Thursday and Sunday. It's in his contract that Jeff...
No, I'm not in Rosemont. Sunday.
Wait.
I'm only in Rosemont Thursday.
Just Thursday?
I'm off Sunday.
I'm going to need them to add a show for
the
you.
Okay, do it. And the next week...
Let me call somebody.
I think Rosemont... Yeah, okay, I don't know. Next week, I'm in Rosemont as well.
Yes, all week next week. Just check out the schedule on zanies.com.
Sure.
We'll figure it out during the break.
Yeah.
It's Lenny Schmidt. Tell me something good. Tell me that you love me, yeah. We are winding down in the Allstate Skyline studio. I want to thank you so much for hanging out with us. And Nick D, of course, is up next. And I, as always, want to wish you a wonderful evening. Hope that you're happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are. We like to wind down the show sometimes. Lenny, there's two choices I have. One is what we meant to get to. A lot of times there's a bunch of stories that I want to talk about, you know, there's topics. Actually, the one that we were going to do tonight, and I might cover this some other time, is this guy wrote an article about how he has been able to stay healthy and not miss a single day of work in 11 years. And one of the things he talks about is, like, not being too clean. Like, he doesn't take showers that often. If he drops food on the ground, he'll still eat it. He doesn't use antibacterial soap. But he, I mean, you're cringing a little bit. But he's
no,
saying,
I eat stuff off the floor. It's not that. That doesn't throw me at all.
Right. So are you? Yeah. Do you consider yourself to be pretty healthy? Do you get colds or?
I haven't been sick in a while, actually. I don't
see, because you eat off the floor.
I think, yeah, because I eat off the floor. Because I travel a lot. So my metabolism is all, you know what I mean? It's a whole, I'm in airports and ships and people and surrounded by stuff all the time. So I think that has something to do with it.
That's the other thing that he says, is traveling in different places and developing your immune system that way is
happening. And I believe whether or not the antibacterial soap also is too much sometimes. Right. You know what I mean? It's... it's good to risk it a little. It's like people are too picky right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everybody's too protected. Like, oh, let's not eat this. Let's not go out. But when we were kids, we did everything. How many rules did we break when we were kids?
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I still have the rust in the back of my mouth from the water hose drinking.
Yeah, exactly. The water hose. Not even your water hose. You know how many times I drink out of a strange water hose?
Mm-mm.
I'd be walking, just go up to somebody's house and turn it on and drink out of it. Yeah, there's a lot of things we did that you look at now and you're like, I wouldn't do that.
No, we're very lucky.
Yeah. No, that's life. We're not lucky.
One of the other elements that he says, though, is to take stock. At the end of the night, he writes down the things that he's grateful for. So that's kind of what we do at the end of the show, is tell me something good.
Okay.
And my something good tonight is I want to thank John O'Malley, who is our law enforcement expert here at WGN Radio, my show. You've heard him on Ro's show. And he happened to be at Lori Lightfoot's celebration tonight and said, hey, do you guys want to talk to Lori? And I was like, sure, yeah.
That's huge.
But I told Cassara afterwards, I was like, he told me that in February when she won the came ahead in the general and it was going to go to the runoff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it didn't come through. So I was like, what's nice of John to like offer to try. And the next thing you know, the phone line lights up and there's Lori Lightfoot on the phone.
Right. That's so cool.
So my something good is having good friends. And thank you to John O'Malley. And thank you to Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot for joining us on the air, jumping on when she was in the middle of a party. She actually, did you hear her? She was leaving. Because we couldn't hear her very well. She couldn't hear us at all. And she had to remove herself. I don't know. you know, from
yeah,
this,
that was nice,
the big
I don't
party.
Know if I would have left the party.
I know. She's done
yeah,
so much.
That's pretty cool, right? Just walk away. Let me walk away for a second and get yeah. some silence.
Well, and you know, also a lot of people think, well, you know, who listens to, you know, the radio at night? We are in 38 states and Canada. She just spoke to more than half of the country about what she plans to do.
Hey, a lot of people listen to the radio at night. I used to work a graveyard shift. Everybody listens. All those people listen to the radio.
By the way, I want to tell you, everyone's listening right now, that I'm so grateful that you're here. So that's my something good.
There you
is
go.
It, we've gone through this all together, and I'm glad that we were able to bring you, I believe, because Sarah and I have been trying to figure this out, if we were the first interview that Mayor Lori Lightfoot
I'm calling
did.
It.
You
I
calling it?
Like, yeah, I'm calling it. We're the first ones.
Agreed.
I'm calling
Agreed, 100%.
I haven't seen anything else on Google, and I've been refreshing every couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So you'll be hearing that a little bit throughout the evening. Again, yeah. I was not prepared, so I just kind of went with questions. I didn't have any, like, usually...
I think it sounded great, though. Like, once I edited it, I just had to, like, clip off when we interrupted... and everything, but I mean, it sounds really good.
Oh, thank you. And that's from the support from you, Kasera, producing tonight. Looking forward to working with you again.
Thank you. Absolutely. For sure. Thank you so much. I love whenever I get to work with you. I love it.
I appreciate that. Today was the first time I think I've ever sent you a rundown.
Yeah. I was actually shocked. I was like, wow.
Yeah, and I did that from the polling place where I was a judge of election, because it was a long day. It was 16 hours, and there were some lulls.
Yeah,
and
I thought,
let me get this off to Kasera.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah. I applaud you for that, because you were doing a lot today. So the fact that you took a moment to send me that, and there were no typos either.
Oh, no? I really was convinced. I was like, whatever, I'm just going to get this to you.
No, no typos at all. Great job.
I have to tell you, there's so many stories about the polling place today. But first, let me ask you, Lenny, tell me something good. What's your something good tonight?
Okay. Here's my only something good.
Is it only?
Well, there's other things, but this
is the one you're going to focus on.
I'm going to focus on this one.
Okay.
I took the first week of September off this year, and the Bears play the Packers to kick off the season, so I will be home and be able to watch the Bears and the Packers sitting in a familiar chair and not traveling. I think that's good.
That's wonderful.
It's a big deal. Yeah. Usually I'm on the road and I miss the Bears games. On the ships, you never see the games. I don't see any games.
Oh, that's terrible.
It really sucks. Oh. So I get a few big games. So it's a big deal to me. Kick off the season at Rick's place. I'm going to watch the Bears game.
I love that.
Yeah.
By the way, Kasera, tell me you're something good. I'm not going to leave you out of this.
I have two something goods.
Okay.
Piggybacking off of you, of course, producing this show and be able to produce the segment with having Lori Lightfoot call in is definitely something that is great. And I will be adding that to my resume tonight. But
yay!
Good for you, yeah.
Thank you. But also, I bought myself a convertible last week, which was like a high school dream that I had set for myself when I was like 15 or 16 years old. So I'm very happy that I finally have this car.
I saw that photo on Facebook.
Thank you.
Congratulations. That's a good feeling.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel great. I can't drive it the way I want to yet. It needs some small work done to it, but... just the fact that it's even in the driveway is enough for me.
That's a huge step. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank
you. Yeah. Do you have a dream car? Because you mentioned that you've always wanted a convertible. Is there something you've always wanted, Lenny? Or
I don't really. I used to when I was younger. I used to be a big fan of a Jaguar.
Sure.
It's called a Jaguar.
Are you calling me names?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
It was made by Ford.
Oh.
It's what? Are they what?
They're made by Ford.
Are they?
Ford motors in them.
Okay. Fair enough. That's fine. That's good. But I used to like that. Now I'm not really that attached to it. I don't have a car. I don't even have a car.
You know what I've been seeing around lately that reminded me, and then sometimes it'll pop up in movies. I used to want one of the real vintage Volkswagen Beetles. So,
really?
Like, I don't know why. I
hated those cars.
It's just so rattly, and it just, I don't know. There's something about it that I just always wanted a Volkswagen Beetle, not the newer versions of it, which are cute. But no, I wanted the vintage ones.
They sell those in Cozumel in Mexico. There was a Volkswagen factory there, and they just abandoned it. Volkswagen just left it. They just go, well, we don't want to make Volkswagens anymore. And the people in Cozumel said, well, then we'll make Volkswagens. And they just came in and started making Volkswagens.
That's right. I think I knew that.
So now there's Volkswagens everywhere in Cozumel, but they're made by the guys in Mexico who just took over the factory.
And that's why you see so many Volkswagens in Mexico.
Yeah, they're all over, yeah.
Hey, Joe, we've got to run, but what's your something good, Joe?
Real fast. I won the ABT award before you took your week's vacation, and the wife is happy with her mixer of her life for cakes, if you will.
Oh.
Number two, this was I found out, 2 days ago that you were out for illness, if you will. That's my second thing. You're going through it, you're bearing up, and you're going to come back better than ever.
Oh, thank you, Joe. I appreciate that.
Thank
you.
Kiddo.
Thank you. Take care, Joe. Good to hear from you. You got to get a cell phone so you don't get the echo. We'll talk to you. I know we'll hear from you on Friday.
Okie doke.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, that's very nice of Joe. We've got to run.